The following episode may contain inappropriate material. Listener discretion is advised.
It's Victor Dandridge, the hardest working man in comics, and you are listening to PVB Cast with John Orlando. Guys, I'm telling y'all it's the best thing on the entire interweb. Listen long, listen strong. John, it's all you, man.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to a new installment of the PVD Cast. I am your podcast purveyor, John Orlando, and welcome to the 200th episode of this podcast. And honestly, I can't believe that I've made it to 200 episodes. And I would love to sit here and talk about the trials and tribulations and the accomplishments that I've had with the PVD Cast, but it's already going to be a long enough episode. So I may post some videos over on Twitter and Facebook and just talk about those things separately because I don't want to take away from your listening pleasure because I have two guests coming on episode 200. And the first one was just kind of a happy accident. And I'll explain a little bit more about that some other time as well. I happened to go out to Wizard World Pittsburgh along with the Three Geeks podcast. And we got an opportunity to sit down and talk with Russ Striner, Johnny from Night of the Living Dead, the iconic horror flick that, quite frankly, started the genre of zombie flicks. And he was such a nice guy. And he talked about Night of the Living Dead as well as some of the things he's done after that film, specifically more behind the scenes in the Pittsburgh area. So it's a great little conversation. It's about 10 minutes. That's going to be at the beginning of the bulk of this episode. And then it's time for Paul Markoff to join me to talk about movies. That's right, avid fans of the PVD Cast know Paul and I sit down twice a year and talk about the movies that have come out for a certain period of time. And we're going to be looking at films that came out between January and, we'll say, the end of July of this year. Doing something a little bit different, by the way, for avid listeners. I've posted a list on Twitter and Facebook showing what movies we're going to discuss so that you're aware, so we don't spoil anything for you. In the past, I've always just put a spoiler up at the beginning of the episode, but this is going to be a little more detailed. So if there's a film there that you haven't seen that you really, really want to see and you don't want any spoilers, you can kind of skip ahead of that. So, and again, that's over on Twitter and Facebook, facebook.com/PVDcast, and of course at PVDMVP. That's where you can find those lists. Wow, that was a lot to get through, and I'm trying to do it quickly so that you can enjoy the bulk of episode 200, and I'm proud to say that this episode is brought to you by World's Greatest Comics. As you know, they're located at 5992 Westerville Road in Westerville, Ohio. They have tons of comics, graphic novels, toys, comic book supplies, and various collectibles. So you need to stop on over to the store and say hi to Jeff or the other fine folks over there, or you can even check them out online at wgcomics.com, and they're even on Facebook at facebook.com/WG Comics. So with that, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to take a quick break. And on the other side of the break, it's episode 200.
Hello, everybody. This is Jason with the Three Geeks podcast. We're sitting here with Russ Striner to talk a little bit about Night of the Living Dead and all the stuff that he has done. What was it like making this movie? I mean, it was like a little indie movie, right?
Well, George and I were business partners. We had a film production business here in Pittsburgh, making TV commercials, industrial films, that kind of thing. And that started off in the early 60s. By the time 1967 rolled around, our production company had enough film equipment, not digital film, real film equipment, to make what we called a real movie, not a TV commercial, a real movie, and that was Night of the Living Dead. George Romero directed it. I produced it along with Carl Hardman, and John Russo and George Romero wrote the script. Like I said, we had everything in-house that we needed, cameras, lights, recording equipment, the whole enchilada, and we figured that 1967 was our time to launch ourselves to a larger platform, that being feature films, and Night of the Living Dead was our first attempt.
This is probably a very stereotyped question, but did you know this movie was going to get to the levels it's gotten today?
I don't think you ever know what exactly in any creative endeavor, whether you're an artist, whether you're a performer, whether you're a filmmaker, you don't know. So every day that you show up at work, you just have to put your best creativity, your best foot forward, and see what happens. And in the case of Night of the Living Dead, we were lucky enough to catch some lightning in a bottle. Our first feature film project became quite famous.
Were you guys friends prior to the movie, or was there casting involved?
George and I were friends for about 3 years. Not 3 years. It was probably more like 8 years before we made Night of the Living Dead. As I said, it was part of, we were business partners cutting our eye teeth on TV commercials, business films, that kind of thing.
I guess my question that I have for you, sir, is what do you think is better about your older style of horror films than, say, today's traditional, you know, horror films? What do you think would be is better?
I don't know that there is a better. Obviously, Night of the Living Dead set certain benchmarks in the genre of horror, and but underneath all of that is the story itself, the storyline, the plot points, what carries the story from point A to point B to point C. I think those are the ingredients that will determine the longevity of a film. Night of the Living Dead has pretty much now proven itself because it's been around in distribution for over 50 years. George and I and John Russo and the others who worked on the film talked among ourselves that we made what we felt was the best picture that we could make at the time on the budget that we had and the resources that we had. But it's the fans of the film that made it a classic. You can't wake up in the morning one day and say, I'm going to make a classic film today. It just doesn't work that way, because the audience, the paying public, has very, very much to do with what they expect and what they will accept before it gets that that wonderful glow of classic filmmaking.
So one more quick question from me. How does it feel to be part of this film and have such a legacy that's connected to it for you personally?
Night of the Living Dead has literally changed my life. Night of the Living Dead has become a celebrity film, and it has dragged the rest of us along with it into the reason that the three geeks want to do an interview with me. And I greatly appreciate your interest, but that film literally changed all of our lives, including George's.
And then I just had a real quick question. Do you still keep up with the horror genre in general? And if so, has there been a movie recently that you feel kind of captures the same spirit of Night of the Living Dead within the last, say, 5 to 10 years?
There's some excellent work being done, and there's been excellent work done in the past. For example, I am terrified. I was terrified from the first time I saw it. The Exorcist. And the reason that film resonated with me is I saw it when I was a new parent. And and I've viewed that work as, what in the hell would you do if this was your kid?
Mm-hmm.
That to me is more terrifying than something coming from outer space or something climbing up out of the ground
right.
to get you.
It's a little closer
that's
to
just
home.
That's me personally.
Mm-hmm.
I have kept up. I think there's some absolutely brilliant work being done, not just in horror, but in film storytelling in general. There's just some really, really promising talent coming up, both in writing and directing, and sometimes writer-director combinations. In terms of what I've done since then, is I've founded and am the chairman of the Pittsburgh Film Office. The Pittsburgh Film Office, we opened the doors almost 30 years ago, and that is the office that attracts movie production to Pittsburgh. And just within the last probably 10 years, just the last 10 years, probably have assisted probably over 180 films and TV shows in Pittsburgh. What that means in general is that represents a lot of work, a lot of jobs in our local Pittsburgh economy, and I'm as proud of that accomplishment as I am of Night of the Living Dead.
Mm. That's fantastic. I didn't realize that you were that involved with that kind of thing, but that is incredible. So, Jason, did you have any other questions?
One, what is the George Romero Foundation?
The George A. Romero Foundation was started by George's widow and some friends of George over the last about year and a half. What the foundation work is all about, what its mission statement is all about, is trying to carry on the legacy that George started, not just in horror, but in filmmaking in general, encouraging and nurturing young filmmakers, and also putting into perspective the kind of work that George was doing and encouraging who those new young filmmakers are through the Romero Foundation and an alliance with the University of Pittsburgh. George's archive, his personal collection, now resides at the Hillman Library in Pittsburgh, and that work is about to be open to the public. It's all curated and cataloged and so forth, and that is about to be launched this fall, as well as the University of Pittsburgh, with George in mind, is starting a international horror studies program. And as far as we know, it's the first one in the world where there will be college credit related to the study specifically of the horror genre.
I hate to ask this, I'm sure you get this all the time, and I'm going to close with this, but is there any way that you can say one of the most famous lines in horror movies, "They're coming to get you, Barbara," for us real quick?
What was the line again?
"They're coming to get us, Barbara," right? Am I quoting that
right? No, I'm just teasing.
Oh, okay.
He got you.
Are you referring to when Johnny is tormenting Barbara,
yeah,
and he says to her, "That coming to get you, Barbara."
Thank you so much for your time.
You're
it was
quite
a pleasure
welcome.
Meeting you.
All right, folks, it's time for a little chat about movies. Paul Markoff is joining me. Paul, how are you?
Good. Thanks for another invite.
Hey, no problem. I always look forward to discussing movies with you. And we're going to be discussing the movies that have come out between January and we'll say the end of July, because we are recording this on July 30th. Folks, I think this time around, I'm going to post a list of the movies that we are going to discuss, post that on Twitter and on Facebook, just so I don't ruin anything, or we don't ruin anything, I should say, for anybody. I think that would be the polite thing to do.
Yeah, no, that's good.
So, also, you know, just
just to maybe get some people to visit the Facebook page and the Twitter as well. I have a hidden agenda.
Good idea.
All right. So I guess I'll start. I'll throw out a movie and we can discuss. All right. I'm going to go back to, I believe, late January or early February, Lego Movie 2.
I enjoyed it. I didn't think it was quite up to the standards of the first, but I'm starting to think they're running their course, but I still enjoy them. They're really silly. They're pretty inventive.
I agree. I gave it a B only because I felt like I did not like the idea that they ruined who's playing with the Legos, like right out of the get-go, you know, because they kept going back and forth between what was happening with the Lego land, you know, and Emmett and all of them. And then they'd flash to the two siblings playing with them. I'm like, don't know.
It was a little disorienting. I mean, we knew from the outset, based on the last Lego movie, of playing with the Legos.
But so. I think it would have been cool to just hold off till the end and then have the big reveal. I think, just for me, like, oh, it's the sister and the brother instead of Will Ferrell and the son. You know, it would have just added a little mystery to it. But overall, it wasn't terrible, but I gave it a B.
Yeah, I mean, it's been the laws of diminishing returns to a certain extent with the Lego movies that have followed. They have Batman Lego movie, which I thought was good. Then Lego Ninjago. I think each of those were a slight step down from the original Lego movie. Mm-hmm. And I think this is probably somewhere between a Lego Ninjago and Lego Batman.
Okay. All right. For me. Yeah, I agree. Like I said, solid B for me. What do you have on your list?
I don't think we talked about Glass.
No, we did not.
Which would have been the third part of M. Night Shyamalan's superhero or a comic book trilogy, following up on Split, and then, of course, years ago, Unbreakable.
Which I never saw Glass, and I never saw Split either, both of which I was told is very, very, very good. So I should definitely check those out, but I didn't get a chance to see those. But did you like Glass?
I did. I think I'm in the minority. I think most people are kind of put off by Glass. The finale has its twist, which I liked.
Okay.
I think a lot of people wanted something more out of the finale.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, action-wise and spectacle-wise, it's not huge. So it works on kind of a micro level. And I think that probably frustrated a lot of viewers, would be my guess.
Okay. What grade did you give it?
We don't do grades on the show.
Oh, that's
but
right.
But from memory, since we transferred from the program to the podcast, we're not boxed. We've decided not to go with grades since we can elaborate about them for as long as we want.
Sure.
You get a good idea of what we think, and we also don't kind of pigeonhole ourselves.
In fact, let's go ahead and mention it.
Filmboundpod.com.
There you go. All right. So
is a podcast I co-host with Mark Pfeiffer.
So there you go. You guys can check that out. I was waiting till the end to talk about that, but it was timely, man.
It was timely.
But you enjoyed Glass.
I did, yeah. I probably would have been B minus. Maybe closer to B.
Okay. The second one that's on my list, I don't know if it'll be on your list, but it's Fighting With My Family.
Yes. We did that for the podcast.
Oh, okay.
I enjoyed it.
You did? Okay. Yeah. I enjoyed it too. I gave it a B+ because of two things. One, I kind of know the story. So for me, being the wrestling nerd that I am, I know about Paige's, you know, travels and triumphs. And there were some things I'm like, yeah, I don't think it happened that way. In fact, I'm pretty sure it didn't happen that way. And so that kind of...
So what parts of the film put you off?
Well, here's the one. Do you remember when she first tried to do the in-the-ring interview or promo and she like got like stage fright? She couldn't say anything. And it was in when they were wrestling like in that bar.
Right.
And it boos. I don't think that ever happened, because what they don't want to tell you is that she had been already in the U.S. for 3 or 4 years prior to all of that, working Shimmer, which is a wrestling promotion out of Chicago, wrestling down in Florida, wrestling around.
Isn't that portion completely different then from what we get in the movie?
Yeah. Like she in the movie, they say, oh, it only took place in England, but she had been in America for 3 or 4 years with mom, touring around, working various different
prior
promotions.
To being noticed or recognized by WWE.
Right.
Wow. Okay.
So that kind of took me out of it a little bit. And I also felt like Vince Vaughn's character was so predictable. I'm like, he's going to be the broke down old wrestler that, gosh darn it, never got his shot. You know, I called that one a mile away. But still, it was enjoyable.
did the Vince Vaughn character actually exist in real life, or was he fabricated for
I think he was fabricated, and then he's kind of the cliche from several, you know, other real life experiences of wrestlers who have maybe not reached that upper echelon and, you know, have gone on to train other people.
Okay. So I liked him in the movie. I didn't.
Yeah. I just kind of knew. I'm like, anyway. So
funny. What about the wrestling scenes? How did
the wrestling scenes I thought were good. Yeah, okay. I thought they were good. Yeah, sure. They had an authenticity to them. And let's be honest, Dwayne The Rock Johnson was fantastic in the maybe 10 minutes he was in.
Yeah.
But I mean.
Yeah, he was really good.
He was really, really good. I mean, it was classic Rock, so.
What about the side story with his brother? Her brother. I assume that was.
Yeah, that's pretty original. Accurate. That's pretty accurate, okay. As well.
Because yes. I found that portion of the film to be probably as compelling as Paige's story. We don't often get the underdog that tries out and gives it their all,
right.
And doesn't achieve their
right.
goal. And,
right.
You know, we get to see the aftermath. So I enjoyed that twist on a kind of familiar story.
Yeah. As far as I know, I think that was pretty accurate. Next on your list.
Isn't it romantic? It's Rebel Wilson.
Gets knocked on
her head and gets thrust into her own romantic fantasy.
Okay.
And she has to fight her way to get out of it. And I found it to be really funny. There aren't enough romantic comedies that are released anymore. Everything's the event picture of the week. So they're all blockbusters now.
Okay.
Everything's $100 million. It has to be $100 million opener every week. So I complain all the time on our podcast that we don't get romantic comedies. So
okay.
We got a romantic comedy.
Okay. And this one was pretty soft.
Yeah, it was really funny. Okay. Yeah.
Who was the male lead in it with Rebel Wilson?
What's his name? It's not Thor, but it's Thor's.
Oh, Liam Hemsworth.
Yes.
It's his kid brother.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
Hemsworth is the.
All right.
Technically he's not the lead, but he's kind of the romantic foil.
Okay. I was going to say the love interest.
Yeah, quote-unquote love interest.
Okay.
Because she has another love interest that plays into the film. And, of course,
ooh,
you can see where the film's going right from the outset, and that's okay. It's a romantic comedy.
All right. But she held her own in it.
Yeah. It's really funny. There's some nice workplace humor that's been put in there, and then they kind of go nuts with the whole fantasy thing.
Okay.
It works really well.
Cool. Something else on your list. I'll let you go again there.
I'll go with something drastically different. It's called High Flying Bird. It was a straight-to-Netflix Steven Soderbergh film about the industry of the National Basketball Association.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, it's fictional, but it deals with some of the same things that probably up-and-comers are dealing with when they first come into the league and whatnot.
Such as, like, trying to fit in and the routine.
More
of
the it's more the financial.
Some of the vices.
It's more the financial angle. And where am I going to latch on to? How much can I expect to make? They're in the midst of, I can't remember if it's a lockout or if it's a strike. One of the two things are currently going on in the NBA at the time in the film. So the players are trying to position themselves to succeed outside of the NBA, while I think they're also trying to avoid breaking certain things that are in the collective bargaining agreement.
Okay.
So it's pretty complicated, although the storyline itself is rather simplistic. It's kind of the intricacies of the NBA. And I think Soderbergh does a pretty good job explaining how it's essentially set up, but it's pretty well involved.
Any big names attached to that project?
I can't think of any. I'm sure they have some modern day NBA players, but
no big Hollywood stars that we can think of right off the top. Okay,
no LeBrons or Kobe's.
Okay, all right. I will go, since we talked about event movies, I'm going to go with probably the first one that I saw of the year, Captain Marvel. Brie Larson, I think, was fantastic in it. I think the plot was a little bit stretched out. They could have condensed it a little bit, which is why I gave it an A-, but overall I really liked it. You not so much.
That was out. No, that's actually, that's one that didn't make the. I recommend most of the films we do on the podcast because, to be honest, I don't want to waste my time seeing movies that I don't want to see.
Right, true.
I wanted to see Captain Marvel.
Okay.
This was the first superheroine or hero movie that I took my daughters to go see, so I was pretty psyched about it that they were going to get to see someone look up to a female superhero. I just thought it was okay. My daughters both enjoyed it.
I was just going to ask if your daughters liked it.
They were 11 and 8 at the time when they saw it.
Okay.
They enjoyed it. It felt kind of flat to me, to be honest. There wasn't any standout action scenes. I thought the humor could have been infused maybe a little bit more into it. And Larson, who's okay, don't get me wrong in the film, she's not bad, but she doesn't have, Captain Marvel doesn't have much of a personality.
Yeah, and
She's outside of being strong-willed.
Right,
which
right.
she is, and yeah. you know, I'm yeah. glad that my daughters could see, you know, a female mm-hmm. superhero that's strong-willed and, mm-hmm. you know, takes it to them. I just thought it was okay. I didn't think it was bad. It just kind of, it felt a little bit short to me.
Okay.
The best part of the movie, and I will say this, it's hard for me to imagine a better cat performance of the year than in Captain Marvel.
Yes, the cat performance was off the hook. So would it be safe to say you were disappointed with Captain Marvel?
Yeah, oh, definitely. I was pretty excited going into it.
Then I'll go ahead and fast forward and talk about the biggest disappointment I have on this list for me.
Okay.
Jim Jarmusch's new flick, The Dead Don't Die.
I didn't see it.
It is awful. Can I just say it is unbelievably, shockingly terrible. And it's got a lot of great, talented people in it. You know, Bill Murray, Adam Driver, Tilda Swinton, Danny Glover. None of them gave great performances. It's a two-hour movie that seems like it's 3.5 from the pacing of it.
Have you watched other Jarmusch films?
I have seen Night on Earth, and it's a little slow, too. I just felt like the film didn't know if it wanted to be a comedy, if it wanted to be a horror film, if it wanted to even be like a social commentary. Because at the end, there's this very weird monologue, recited by Tom Waits. And I'm like, is this supposed to be was this whole thing an analogy of capitalism? Like, it was so weird, so disappointing. Boring, absolutely boring, and I can't believe a zombie apocalypse film can be boring.
Those are the criticisms I've heard, is that it's kind of a mixed bag of several things, but the yes. one thing I have heard that's been consistent is, first and foremost, it's a Jim Jarmusch film, that right. his are always, they're very slow paced.
Yes.
They're methodical.
The only thing that I found humorous was the RZA's part in it, because he was a UPS driver, but because it's RZA, it's WooPS. Which was funny, but again, that was the only thing that made me chuckle. Overall,
all I gave that in a 2-hour movie, huh?
All that, yeah. He's only in it for 10 minutes. It got an F. I cannot recommend it at all. So that was my big disappointment, because I thought, oh, this is going to be somewhat good. You know, Bill Murray in a zombie film. Yeah, no, it's not good. So, what do you got up next?
I'm going to stick with things I've really enjoyed.
Okay.
One of the better movies I've seen this year is Us, the new Jordan Peele horror film.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Where
yeah.
a family
evil meets doppelgangers.
Yes. Essentially, okay. they meet their doppelgangers, and their doppelgangers are not very nice. Mm-hmm. It starts in the 80s, and there's a Hands Across America reference.
Oh, no way.
Which was nice, but it kind of ties into the proceedings and what I think Peele's inevitably trying to get at as far as his commentary is concerned. It's creepy. It's original. I'd love to see it again.
Oh, okay.
If I ever get the chance.
You know, it was one of the ones that I did not get to see that I wanted to, but just, you know, didn't get around to it. All right, let's just go ahead and talk about it. The event movie of the first half of 2019 that I know you had to have seen, even though you're not a fan, Avengers Endgame.
Yes.
You did see it.
Okay. I saw it. I recommended it on our podcast. I recommended the... Infinity the first War. Part, yes. Yeah, Infinity okay. War of the... I mean, I guess you could say it's all a big saga with...
Sure.
I don't know how many are there. 23, I think, Marvel movies that led up to... Oh, 23 yeah. that led up to yeah, Endgame, yeah, yeah, and then yeah, Endgame yeah. 23.
But you liked Endgame.
I did. Okay. I think certainly all the storylines and all the superheroes mm-hmm. and everything they have going on in it, mm-hmm. whatever the runtime was, 3.25 or whatever, it was justified because they have enough story. They have more than 3.25... storyline to tell.
Yeah, right.
I liked how it really played with the time travel, going back and revisiting some of the moments in the other films and mm-hmm. throwing a different angle on it, how they had to kind of reorchestrate what had happened in the past. I thought that was pretty ingenious. Mm-hmm.
It had emotional, it pulled on your heartstrings a little bit, you know? Or at least it did to me.
And like, I don't have as much emotionally invested in the Avengers.
I felt a little verklempt at times, okay. you know? Especially with those scenes with Tony and his daughter, you know, just that got to me. Overall, I mean, it's really, really well done. I can't say anything that hasn't already been said about it.
No, I mean, it's the thing that I enjoyed most about it is the things we don't really get in any of the other Marvel films, mm-hmm. which, I mean, I guess you get maybe a little bit with Doctor Strange because he has the time travel component right. in his films.
Sure.
is that they were able to go back and kind of flip mm-hmm. through. I mean, time was kind of relative
right.
in
right.
Endgame. And I thought they did a good job. One, it was interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Two, it was just fun.
Yeah.
And they kind of play, you know, in the midst of the yeah. meltdown of the universe or the rebuilding of the universe, they had a lot of fun with it. And I enjoyed that it wasn't all dark and somber.
And I didn't feel like it seemed like 3 hours
no,
or whatever.
No,
it seemed
it
to move
very
right
well.
Along. And to me, hats off to the Russos for moving that right along and not making it into a Jim Jarmusch film, so to speak. So, all right, what do you got next on your list?
Well, let's stay with, since we're talking about superhero films.
Okay.
One that I did enjoy was Shazam.
The best DC movie that they've made. I said
yes,
it. There you go. I've said it.
Of the new universe.
Yeah.
I would say post-Nolan.
Right.
Post-Nolan.
Right.
No,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah. No, no. I totally,
no, I would agree with you.
Yeah. It was... And Aquaman I liked, but this was just... It didn't take itself seriously. It was fun. It had some great humor. Zachary Levi did a fantastic job of playing Shazam. Great film. Loved it. Loved it from the minute it started till the minute it ended. I really dug it.
You can sense that DC is maybe starting to take some cues from the Marvel Universe.
Sure.
Because they're having a little more fun with their films now.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't see Aquaman, but from what I understand, it's a little more fun, a little more lighthearted.
Yes.
Wonder Woman, which was still kind of fairly dark, still had some lighter moments.
Mm-hmm.
And her as a character was a little more playful. And now they've gone full bore with Shazam. You know, they've taken the gloves off and said, you know, we're still going to have some fun with the action scenes
yeah.
and the fighting. But this is going to be a fun picture. We're going to try
yes.
to make people laugh. We're
yes.
going to enjoy the superpowers that our hero has as opposed to being a burden.
Mm-hmm.
There's going to be more joy in this picture.
Right. And I think that this was the movie to do that with because of the source material. You have a young boy that becomes
right.
Shazam. So why not have it, even though it's not played that way in the early history of the character in the comics. The awkwardness of, you know, not knowing what to do when you're, you know, now all of a sudden 6'3", you know, 220 pounds and you have all the magical powers. Yeah, I really like Shazam. I gave it an A. I liked it a lot. It was just overall fun, as we said.
I of the three that we've discussed so far, that would be the best of the three.
Okay, all right,
but not the best superhero movie this year that
what
I've seen.
Go ahead. What is it? Because I would like to know.
Spider-Man: Far From Home.
Okay, now I'm gonna go right here and say, as of this recording, I've yet to see it. My vacation to Rhode Island kind of threw a wrench in the plans of watching Spider-Man. But you liked it.
Yeah, it's a
okay.
lot of fun. It picks up right where Spider-Man Homecoming
okay.
left off. As far as, you know, with the tone, it's,
mm-hmm.
it's you know, it, the action scenes move fast. They're a lot of fun. It's extremely funny. It's still, first and foremost, a teen film, I would say, more
sure.
than anything, because you spend as much time with Peter Parker as Peter Parker
mm-hmm.
than you do with him as Spider-Man.
Mm-hmm.
So he's still in the awkward stage. Now has a new love interest in Far From Home since his other love interest moved.
Mm-hmm.
Now he's back with MJ.
Okay.
As far as the series is concerned, he's always
mm-hmm.
Spider-Man's always been with Mary Jane. I'm not sure if her name's Mary Jane in this.
I don't know if she is.
But
yeah.
she goes by
MJ.
But
so
she goes by
same.
MJ.
Yeah.
So you have that, and there's another boy that's vying for MJ. So... there's a little bit of a rivalry brewing
okay.
between Parker and this other boy.
Mm-hmm.
And it has some fun with
sure.
the awkwardness of being a teen.
And it also carries on some of the storyline about what happened with Avengers, with Tony Stark and the feelings of guilt and whatnot for that as well.
Yes. I don't know if it's as much guilt as he's lost. He's never really had a father figure.
Right, right.
And Tony
right.
Stark served as his father figure.
Mm-hmm.
So there's another character that comes in and maybe is going to serve as that father figure. Mysterio, who's played
okay.
by Jake Gyllenhaal.
Right, right. Who I've heard has did a fantastic job with that role.
He's good at it,
yeah.
You can tell that he's, again, like everyone else in the film, is having a lot of fun in it.
Cool. Sticking with the theme, because I actually have two other superhero movies here. Hellboy, the remake.
I did not see it.
Well, you didn't miss much, Paul.
I think the rest of the audience is would agree with you.
I gave it a D. Here, I'll tell you why it didn't get an F. I do give a tip of the hat for the fact that they tried to do something different with the story. There's a tie-in to King Arthur in the Knights of the Round Table. And I'm like, well, that's cool, because that was not in the original movies that they did, you know, with Ron Perlman. I'm like, okay, that's cool. And that sounds like that would be a cool premise for a story. The problem that I have is that it seems like it's a just a variety. They have that storyline set, but it's really could have been done in like 30 minutes. So they have to pad in with all these other random events that happen that are very loosely tied to the King Arthur storyline. So I was like, you lost me on that. The guy that plays Hellboy is no Ron Perlman.
That's what I was wondering, because to me, Perlman really put his stamp on the role.
Yeah, this guy's not, he's no Ron Perlman.
It's the, and I don't know his stage name, it's Hopper from Stranger Things, right?
Yes, it is, correct, okay. Yes, and I don't remember the actor's name, but yeah. But he's just, he yells a lot, which I'm like, well, if you watch the original Hellboys, like Ron Perlman, yes, had the big burly voice, but he conveyed emotion with his voice. This Hopper just seems to yell a lot, and it's like, okay. And again, it's just a bunch of random things thrown in there. The other reason why I didn't give it an F, there is a little, at the end, a little sneak peek that Abe Sapien might be in the next one, which is a great character from the original movies that I really dug. But yeah, overall, it's kind of a jumbled mess. So
that was one. That and Dark Phoenix are ones that I did not see.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure there's a few other ones that snuck through the crack.
Well,
it seems like there's one every other weekend.
There does. And here's another one that I will mention. And this is the last superhero one that I have. And some people might say it's not a superhero movie, but indeed it's a horror movie. That would be the James Gunn-produced Brightburn, starring Elizabeth Banks. I don't think it got a very wide release. I gave it a C. It's not terrible, but it's not great. It's an original premise. What if Superman crashed on Earth, and he was raised, of course, by his parents, but he turned out to be the biggest psychopath on the face of the planet? Ooh, that sounds interesting. And that's indeed what it is. A young boy who is an alien from another planet crashes in Kansas. Elizabeth Banks and Doug Denham, I believe is his name. He's a character actor that if you look him up on IMDb, you'd go, oh yeah, that guy, because he's been in a million things. The problem that I had with Brightburn was that the... I don't know if it's Elizabeth Banks' portrayal of the character or if it's just poorly written. The character of the mother is completely blah. Like, I don't believe anything, any of the actions or any of the dialogue that the mother would come up, that the mother came up with that in the movie. So it really just kind of took me out of it. I will say this, it's 90 minutes. So it doesn't waste time with a bunch of like backstory. You know, kids here, he's creepy. Things start going wrong. Well, like, because they live on a farm, animals start dying mysteriously. You know, mom and dad bicker about who it is, and then we're off the rails and he's off killing people, and there you go. So overall, not terrible. Good premise, just the execution was bad. You have any other superhero movies?
I think I'm superheroed out. I think we covered all the ones that I've seen this year.
Well, you know what? Then it's probably a good time right now, since we're talking about superheroes, we got them all out of the way, to remind everybody that this episode is brought to you by World's Greatest Comics. They're located at 5992 Westerville Road in Westerville, Ohio. And they have tons of comics, graphic novels, toys, comic book supplies, and various collectibles. So stop on over to the store and say hi to the friendly staff over there at World's Greatest Comics. Or you could check them out online at wgcomics.com. And they're even on Facebook, Paul. Facebook.com/WGComics.
I'll see what's in store then for next year by going there. That's all they keep doing. That's all the studios keep doing, right? They pluck the latest one off the rack. And
exactly. There you go. All right, so what's next on your list?
Well, we could talk about some Netflix, original Netflix ones.
Okay.
Some good, some bad.
Okay.
There's a film out there called Tramps on Netflix.
Really?
Yeah.
What is it about?
It's about these kind of two stragglers that meet in a low scheme, low stakes. I don't know how to describe it. I don't want to give away the end of the film.
But okay.
They're giving some money to...
To gamble?
Like to pull off a job.
Okay.
I'll just say that.
Okay.
And these are both 20-somethings. One's a man, one's a woman.
Mm-hmm.
And they're both kind of come from different areas of the world. Okay. And it's interesting to watch them navigate kind of this lower end scheme, shall we say. And it was really enjoyable. It was real original. Not necessarily a romantic comedy, but there's some romance in it.
But more of a crime type of movie.
Yeah, low-level crime, though. Okay. So, I mean, it's not really high stakes, which makes it, to a certain extent, more enjoyable because they're kind of, they're not in the seedy underbelly. They're more in middle-class suburban.
Suburbia. It's 11. Yeah. They're not knocking over a casino. No. Okay.
But again, that's what kind of made it really enjoyable is you kind of had these two awkward people and it was more lighthearted.
Okay, gotcha.
One that I didn't care for is called a Netflix original called The Perfection.
Oh, I've heard of that. Yeah. You didn't dig that? Why?
No, there's
What's the quick summary of it real quick for those folks listening at home?
A former child prodigy reunites with she was a cellist and she had something personal go on. She left the institution and she comes back as kind of a reunion for the next up and coming star.
Okay.
Next up and coming prodigy, cello prodigy. And they hit it off. There's some seedy things going on with the institution that teaches these individuals.
But it just doesn't go anywhere?
A completely whacked out, I don't want to say twist, but event in the picture that is...
It ruins it.
Yeah, it completely takes it off course. You're like, it's so stupid that no one would buy it for 1 minute. And Roger Ebert used to, I said this on our podcast, Roger Ebert used to, I forgot what he termed it or coined it, but he talked about this about romantic comedies, how there was always one thing that if people made the logical decision, then the smart decision, which most people would do, that the movie would be over in about 5 minutes.
Yeah.
But they have to have them do asinine things one after the other to keep the plot and film going. And this has one extremely stupid event that keeps the movie going.
Okay. All right. Anything else from Netflix that you had on the on your list?
I liked a film called I Am Mother.
Okay.
Set in the future.
Okay.
It's about a cloned. The robots have taken over.
Okay.
And there's a robot.
Wait, that's Terminator Dark Fate that's coming out later. No, I'm just kidding.
And we'll talk about that too. But it starts with you see these embryos. And you see the robot take the embryo out, put it in some kind of preservation pod. With water and presumably some other substances, and then the embryo becomes a baby within 24 hours, and it goes from there.
Okay. All right. So it's a little science fiction.
Oh, yeah. It's all science fiction. Okay. Yeah. All right. It's more or less confined to, I think it's a spacecraft.
Any big names connected with these few Netflix originals, by the way?
I didn't mention.
No.
Okay.
No. Well, the next one on my list, a little bait and switch, I think, but I'm going to be fair with this movie. Rocket Man.
I enjoyed it. I liked Rocket Man. I thought it was
I think it was a bait and switch because I was anticipating Bohemian Rhapsody. Like, it's a straight biopic. It's a musical. Let's just be honest.
Yeah.
Rocket Man is a musical.
Yeah, that's what I liked about it.
I know. See, I'm kind of wishy-washy when it comes to musicals. So, I was fair. I gave it a C because I'm not going to trash it because it was a musical. But I'm not going to... I don't know where to put it on the spectrum. There were parts of it that were very interesting. The song and dancing, the singing and dancing, I don't know. That, to me, just didn't really do it for me. So I gave it a C.
Yeah, I thought it was an improvement upon Bohemian Rhapsody.
Really?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, because Bohemian Rhapsody was more or less, to me, if you're going to say Rocket Man was a musical, which is what it is, then Bohemian Rhapsody was a concert film where... You have drama, then you have concert footage, then you have more drama, then you have concert footage.
Okay.
And
fair enough.
I enjoyed the concert footage.
Okay.
The drama I didn't think worked as well in Bohemian Rhapsody.
Okay. All right.
So I didn't understand the acclaim for Bohemian Rhapsody.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, I enjoyed it, but
okay.
I kind of found it to be, hey, this is kind of cool. It was like a greatest hits album of
Queen.
Queen, yeah. And I was fine with that.
Okay.
You know, I enjoyed it, but... I didn't really get the up for best picture, you know, Rami Malek winning best actor. He wouldn't have made my list.
Okay. Well, Taron Egerton does a great job as Elton John, too. I do got to give credit to him. He did a fantastic job in that role, I felt.
Yeah, yeah, I thought he was terrific. I thought his probably does deserve, at least based on the first 7 months of the year, he would make my short list of people that should be up for an Oscar. And I like the dynamic between him and Jamie Bell.
Oh, yeah.
Who
yeah.
is his writer, because John didn't write, well, he goes by Elton John, I'll call him out. John.
Yeah.
John didn't write any of his songs.
Right, right, yeah.
You know, it was Bell's character, Bernie Taupin, that wrote all the hits. John scored the music to it. Mm-hmm. But
All right. I gave a D+ to Godzilla, King of the Monsters.
Passed.
You passed on it.
You could smell that from a mile away.
Well, here's why I didn't get enough. They gave us what we wanted, unlike the last Godzilla film, which is plenty of monsters fighting each other, because that's what you need. In the last one, let's be honest, it didn't have that at all.
No.
So I give it credit for this. The problem that I had with this Godzilla, and I've talked about it before, I need strong villains. And this film did not have strong villains to it. The human beings that are in charge of the maniacal organization that's trying to manipulate the monsters, it was such a preposterous and ridiculous, stupid, like, number one, game plan. But number two, like, the head of it was just so, like, wishy-washy. And Vera Farmiga, is that how you pronounce her last name? She's terrible in the movie. She's awful. Like, I was like, ugh. So,
the monster scenes worked, it would have worked, right?
Well, yeah, but the problem that I had with it was Farmiga was kidnapped with the daughter, okay, and held captive by this evil villain and his organization. By the way, her ex-husband is trying to, he's on the side of good with the other actors, and they're trying to, you know, get Godzilla to attack the other monsters that are attacking. But then there's all of a big twist that Vera Farmiga's character is actually in on it. She's the right hand man to the evil villain guy, but she doesn't want her daughter to know that. I'm like, see, just be villainous, you know. And
you're trying to be clever about it.
Yeah, instead of trying to be clever about it, it was awful. Like I said, it did give us monster-on-monster violence, which was better than the last one, but yeah.
No. See, now I thought they were going to tie all of these monster movies in.
Well, yes.
Because at the end of Kong Skull Island?
Yes, Kong Skull Island.
You know, they have this scene at the end where you find out that they know about these other monsters, you know, and we've already seen King Kong and Godzilla had been released, and I thought they were going to tie it all in together and make some sort of monster mash.
Mm-hmm. So the rumor is that supposedly that King Kong shows up in the next one. So, but you did have Rodan, you had Mothra, Ghidra.
Oh, they were in this one.
Yeah, they were in this one. So you had them. And then, you know, so yeah, overall, though, it just fell flat.
How about they're making Disney remakes left and right? I did not see, as of this recording, I have not seen Lion King.
Oh, okay.
Because I was on vacation last week, but I did see Aladdin.
Aladdin, I was going to say, you went and saw the other one, didn't you?
Yes.
Aladdin, how was it?
I enjoyed it. It's critically, it's been kind of mixed, I guess. It pretty much stays true to form, what the original Aladdin was. Jasmine has a little more say in the proceedings.
Oh, that's cool.
There's a wonderful musical song with her at the end. And I liked Will Smith as the genie. That was my big, I was very apprehensive about, was this going to work based on Will Smith being the genie, because Robin Williams had really put his stamp on genie. Will Smith makes his own genie, and I thought he did a terrific job.
Cool.
I enjoyed it. The kids enjoyed it. I actually told my kids afterwards, I said, we need to go, because I remember seeing him. It reminded me of some of the stuff that he would have done on The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air.
Oh! So did you break it out for the kids? You watch some
I didn't have any, but yeah, we'll have to start staying up later watching some Nick at Night.
Well, hey, speaking of remakes, I saw Shaft.
Okay.
And I liked it. I know I'm in the minority because that movie got trashed, but I give it an A- because I thought it works as a buddy cop movie, all right, in the comedy, which I know the original Shaft was not that way. You know, the original 1971 Shaft.
Right.
I'm going to pretend the 2001 didn't happen because it's god-awful. If you've never seen it.
No, I've seen it. I'm trying to remember what I thought of it. I didn't think it was horrible.
Again, it's just random things that happen, and Shaft happens to show. Anyways, We'll just pretend that one didn't happen. This one I liked, and because I like the idea that you have young Shaft, or JJ as he's called in the movie, has to deal with the old man, Samuel Jackson's Shaft. And there's the generational difference, you know. Obviously, JJ is much more politically correct and socially aware, and Samuel Jackson's version isn't. And that dynamic was fantastic. And the plot was not complicated. I mean, it's very straightforward, but it worked. I liked it a lot. I gave it an A-. And I, as I know, no one gave it a very good score. I know that many, many, many critics panned it, but I liked it.
Yeah, no, it didn't get very good reviews. No. It didn't stick around very long.
No, it did not. It did not whatsoever.
Speaking of buddy movies.
Okay.
There's one that's decent.
Okay.
I probably would give it it would be a B-.
Okay.
It's called Stuber.
Oh, the Dave Bautista comedy.
Dave Bautista, Kumail Nanjiani. Yeah. And it works because those guys are really good together.
Okay.
The writing isn't great.
Okay.
The action's okay.
Okay.
But those two work so well together, and there are a couple situations that they're thrown into where they laugh it up pretty good.
Okay. Cool. Because that has not gotten good reviews.
No.
So,
no.
You know, so it's good to hear that at least there's the potential for a few laughs.
Yeah.
All right, I got one more left. I'm going to defer to you if you have anything else, because I'd like to end with this one because I think it's going to take a little bit of time to explain.
Okay.
So, do you have anything left there from these last few months?
Well, we didn't talk about Toy Story 4.
Oh, okay.
Which
okay.
I would consider probably the best movie I've seen this year.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
That or Nonfiction, which are completely two different films.
What's Nonfiction?
Nonfiction is a foreign language film. It's a French film.
Okay.
And it details, it's a very talky film, but it details an actress and her husband, who is a writer-director, and some other writer-directors, and they basically talk about the changing landscape of writing, whether it's a book or for social media, and how you can promote.
So it's a legitimate documentary.
It's not a documentary.
It's a fictional tale?
It's a fictional tale.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Right. And you're intertwined with these individuals that are not faithful to their spouses, and some of the people they interact with, they had past romances with, and it's a really well-versed film.
Okay.
They talk about a wide array of subjects and topics. Again, it's more or less hearted in the entertainment industry, but you get the yin and the yang and everything there is in this picture.
Okay.
It's very well done.
Okay.
And then Toy Story 4.
Okay.
I enjoyed quite a bit. I think it stacks up with
the rest of the Toy Story franchise.
Yeah, it's right up there. Maybe just going based on memory, because I haven't seen it in quite some time. Toy Story 2 is probably my favorite, but I'd say Toy Story 4 is
right up there.
Yeah, right behind it.
Who is the director for 4? Because, I mean, obviously they've had different directors.
Yeah, Lasseter is involved in it.
Okay.
I'm not sure that he's being billed as much, thanks to some bad
tweets,
publicity that he got in this, in the Me Too era.
Okay.
You know, everybody's being outed, and he's one that
has been.
Again, there's some allegations. I don't wish to speculate whether they're true or not, but actually, Josh Cooley is the director. Lasseter is credited as a writer, as is Andrew Stanton and several other individuals. But it's got the old gang back together. Buzz, Woody, Little Bo Peep is back. She plays an integral part of it.
Okay.
And they introduce some new characters, which are probably as good as any two new characters you could introduce to the series in Forky. And Duke Kaboom.
So, oh, yes, Duke Kaboom. I've seen his action figure all over Target. So, yeah.
And Forky is real weird.
Okay.
And the film is a little, for lack of a better term, is a little weirder than your average Toy Story film.
Okay.
Which I appreciated, too, that it was willing to go a little off the map for some laughs.
All right. My last film that I have on my list is probably going to be a little bit of a controversial one, but I'm going to throw it out there. It's a documentary that I went to go see at the Wexner Center. Penny Lane is the director. The documentary I'm referring to is Hail Satan. It is a documentary talking about the Satanic Temple and how, if you remember, these are the individuals that were against the Ten Commandments statues being placed outside of the federal building in Oklahoma City and then later in, I believe, Baton Rouge, Louisiana. Not knowing much about the film other than seeing the trailer, I was very curious to go see this film. It is well done. It is very well done. It gives you some laughs. It gives you some history. It gives you some theology. It gives you some thought-provoking reflection. And the whole tale is about, indeed, how the Satanic Temple really has nothing to do with worshiping Satan. Like, it's kind of, they're very tongue-in-cheek about the fact that that's kind of been, throughout pop culture, blown up into this whole, you know, they worship the devil and they, you know, kill people and kill goats and all that jazz. But it's basically how they just want a separation of church and state. And how they are somewhat unnerved by how, and I'm sure you're not shocked by this, Paul, some people use religion for their own personal gain.
Sure.
Or their own professional gain, or professional gain as well. And so they just want to keep an eye on that. And they talk about the history of that particular church. They talk about their endeavors to try to get those monuments removed. And yes, they do it in a very tongue-in-cheek way. They even also show the bad side. Like, they had, there's a section of that documentary where they're talking about all the various different chapters. The Detroit chapter is run by a young lady that starts getting really, really weird and really, really out there. And they talk about how they said, listen, you can't do this. And they expel her from the church and that. It was really well done. Yeah, I highly recommend it, as it's really interesting and very, very thought-provoking. Overall, I really, really dug it. So I know it's streaming right now on iTunes and Amazon, because I don't think it got a very big release, because it's Magnolia Pictures. Hail Satan.
Hail Satan.
Okay. Yes.
Well, I mean, with a title like that, you know, it grabs you.
It does. You know? And like I said, I wish I could have, at the time that I saw it at the Wexner Center, they actually had Penny Lane in town, and she was going to present a Q&A after the film. They had stated she was running late because of an error, airport problem, that she had landed but was not actually, you know, she was en route. I could not stay after the film because I was like, if this is going to go on till like midnight, and I had other things going on personally that I had to do, so I didn't get to stick around. I would have loved to stick around and see and talk to her, because apparently, you know, she's all about getting very bizarre subject material for her documentaries. She's done a couple other ones, but Hail Satan, fantastic documentary.
If I can sneak one more in here.
Yeah, go ahead.
Because what
go
you're ahead. Talking about,
mm-hmm.
I can't believe I forgot to mention this.
Okay.
It's a horror film directed by Ari Aster, who directed Hereditary from last year.
Okay.
Called Midsommar.
Oh, yes. That got a lot of buzz.
Yes, and it deserves the buzz that it
okay.
got.
Okay.
A young woman, college age, who has just lost her sister and her parents mm-hmm. in a tragedy to start the film, is still with her boyfriend, more or less because he feels guilt-ridden about what's happened to her. He plans a trip overseas and then invites her as a courtesy to go overseas on this trip with him and his buddies to someplace in Sweden.
Okay.
For the summer festival for one of his
okay.
one of his classmates in college, one of his buddies in college. There's a summer festival that his family partakes in, and they go to this summer festival and things get a little weird.
Oh, okay. All right. But you really enjoyed that as a horror film.
It's hard to say I enjoyed it.
Well, yeah.
Or that I liked it, because it is some kind of bizarre. It is extremely graphic
okay.
in every way imaginable, but it sticks to you. It sticks
okay.
to your brain. I mean, you're not going to forget what you see in Midsommar
wow.
if you see it, but listeners should be warned.
Okay.
It's very graphic. And I mean, if you've seen Hereditary.
Yeah, that's a freaky movie.
Yeah, that's more scary. This one's more disturbing.
Gotcha. All right. Shall we talk about upcoming films? You know,
sure.
since we won't talk till probably December, there's going to be quite a bit that's coming out here. As a matter of fact, this weekend is the big Fast and the Furious project called Hobbs and Shaw that's dropping. I have no interest in seeing it, by the way.
Either do I. We will be dropping off of our podcast because we won't be reviewing it.
Yeah, because I've never seen a Fast and the Furious movie. And
really?
No.
Okay.
I'm not interested in the subject material. I don't like Vin Diesel. I can't stand Michelle Rodriguez.
Not in this one.
Right. And I do like the fact that The Rock is in it.
Right.
But yeah, I'm probably not going
to
see that.
Well, this is just piggybacking on the success of the Fast and the Furious
sure.
to try
right.
to make more money.
Right. Let's see. What else do we have? We have Dora and the Lost City of Gold coming up.
Pass.
Yeah, same here. Angry Birds 2.
again. That's pass. A hard pass. I don't even think my 9-year-old wants to see Angry Birds 2.
It 2.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that.
Okay.
I thought the first one was well done, mm-hmm. and I'll mm-hmm. be interested to see. Hopefully it doesn't fall flat like the part 2 of the television.
Yeah, I will pass on both of the, or on It 2 and Angry Birds 2 as well, only because I've never seen It, any okay. of the versions of it. And again, horror's not my thing, so I probably will pass on those.
It will be a big, big hit, though.
Oh, I think it will. I think it. I've seen the trailer, and it looks really, really good. Rambo Last Blood.
Yeah, that's probably that's another hard one. Pass. Really, there's really that much more story to tell.
This one I did not even know is coming out, but Daniel Radcliffe's in it. There's a Playmobil movie coming out. You know, Playmobil, the Dutch yes. figurines that were boring as all get out as a kid.
It sounds like they're trying to
be like the Lego
yeah,
movie.
Yeah,
but
they're trying to piggyback on that success.
Yeah, it. I'm like, yeah, that looks like that's going to be hot garbage. So I will be passing on that one as well.
Yeah.
But now, Ad Astra.
Yes, I'm looking forward to that. I think that's gotten some buzz. Mm-hmm. It comes out probably more early fall than
late
summer, September sometime.
Yeah, late September maybe, I think. But that's getting some buzz. That's got my interest. I am on the fence with Joker.
I want to see it. It's got Joaquin Phoenix, so...
Okay.
If he's doing it, it'll be interesting, if nothing else.
Yeah. Zombieland 2.
I liked Zombieland, so...
I did, too.
Yeah, sign me up for another one.
This one is a weird one, but I'm looking forward to it. Jojo Rabbit.
Jojo Rabbit.
You've not heard about this. Scarlett Johansson's in it. It's also starring in it, as well as the director is... And I can't pronounce his name. Takiki... he's tapped to do the next Thor movie. He did what did he just do for Marvel?
Did he do Ragnarok?
Yes, he did Ragnarok. Thank you. Yes, he did.
Yeah, I still don't know how to pronounce his name though.
But you know who I mean. So it's about it takes place in World War II, and Scarlett Johansson plays this woman who, and I can't forget. Oh, Sam Rockwell's the father. They're hiding a Jewish girl in their attic, and the kid. Is a little, like, 6-year-old boy, is trying to make sense of it all because his imaginary friend, who's played by this Takiki, is Adolf Hitler. So, it sounds weird. It sounds like a bizarre plot. I'm going to go check that out because I just want to see how that plays out. So, that one I'm looking forward to. The Fred Rogers biopic,
yeah.
Won't You Be My Neighbor, that, you know, I mean...
Hanks and Fred Rogers...
I mean, that's a slam dunk of an Emmy, or excuse me, an Oscar.
Yeah, it would seem so, yeah.
Yeah. Terminator Dark Fate, which I referenced a little bit ago. What's your thoughts on it?
Well, it brings back three of the most popular characters in the series.
True.
So I'm interested to see it.
Mm-hmm.
You have Schwarzenegger back, Linda Hamilton, and they have Edward Furlong.
Right,
in
right.
this one, too. So I have hope, because I think it's the last two, I think, have been pretty bad.
Yeah.
The last two Terminator
yeah.
films.
One that interests me, Ford versus Ferrari. I think that flick looks really interesting.
That has some big names to it.
It's Christian Bale and... oh, crap. I'm drawing a blank.
But it's set around the rights for the Le Mans car.
Yes,
is that right?
Correct. Yes, yes. And the competition between Ford and Ferrari. Shoot, who is... Christian Bale is one, and I want to say Matt Damon is the other one.
Yes.
Okay, Matt Damon. There we go. Frozen 2 and Jumanji, The Next Level, come out as well in the fall.
I enjoyed both of the originals, mm-hmm. Frozen more so than Jumanji.
Okay.
So I actually have to talk my 12 and 9-year-old daughters into seeing Frozen 2 because now they think it's, you know, too babyish. Or
oh, really?
It's quote, okay. You know. I don't know what it is, animated, or I think it's too girly and they want to be more independent or what. And I said, if your 45-year-old father wants to go see Frozen 2, you're going to go see Frozen 2 with me.
And, of course, the year ends with Star Wars, Rise of Skywalker. I'm curious, you know, I want to see how things progress with that storyline.
Yeah, yeah, no, I think everyone's excited about it. And normally I could care less about what it does box office wise, but I'm curious to see in the end how that's going to stack up with Avengers Endgame. Because
right.
these are questionably Well, I mean, it won't be a question by the time the box office receives
right.
But these could be the two largest films of all time.
Correct. Yeah.
I know Avengers Endgame passed
Avatar.
Yeah. And I would suspect Star Wars The Rise of Skywalker is going to have to be right up there.
Yeah. Is there any other things that you're looking forward to coming out in the next few months that I did not reference?
The Irishman, which is...
The Irishman.
Martin Scorsese.
Oh.
Gangster film with Robert De Niro, Al Pacino, and Harvey Keitel.
Oh.
And it's going straight to Netflix. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That's the project.
So I'm curious to see how this is going to play out.
Yeah.
Not only with how many people are going to watch it, how it's received, and then, of course, it seems to be taboo to award Netflix films anymore.
Right,
Roma,
right.
I think there was some backlash with Roman Spielberg coming out with his comments. I think it hurt it in its best picture chances this last season, but it'll be interesting to see how The Irishman does.
Mm-hmm. Anything else on the list? You have Gemini Man on there?
I have Gemini Man on there.
You're looking forward to that.
Well, it's got Ang Lee attached. I haven't seen any trailers, but it's got Ang Lee, who normally does good work.
Well, I don't know, because I'm still somewhat disturbed by Ang Lee's Incredible Hulk back in the day, but go ahead. Anyways.
I actually did not care for her. Did he do The Incredible Hulk or just
no,
Hulk?
No, he did Hulk.
Okay,
did
so
Hulk.
I did like Hulk.
Yeah, The Incredible Hulk's Hulk. With Ed Norton.
Right, that was the one I didn't care for. So I did like Hulk.
Okay.
And he does things that are a little different. So I find it interesting that he's going to do something like Gemini Man.
I've seen previews for it. To me, it doesn't wow me, but it doesn't make me go, yeah, I won't see it. I don't know. It just, Ang Lee still scares me, that's all.
There I mean, he did Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon.
Which was great. Mm-hmm. But after that, I mean, you know.
I believe he directed The Ice Storm, which was very well received, and I enjoyed it when it came out. He also did Life of Pi, which was actually my number one film
of
the year.
Yeah, okay. I forgot that he did that, to be honest with you.
He directed Brokeback Mountain.
Okay.
Sense and Sensibility and Eat, Drink, Man, Woman were very well received when they came out.
Okay.
So he's...
He's cleansed his palate
I associate him more with films that are more artful in nature. So when I see something like he's directing Gemini Man, it piques my interest.
And me, I'm still stuck on the superhero tragedy that was the Hulk. That's me. All right. Draw your own conclusions at home.
We'll have to watch Gemini Man so we can draw our own conclusions.
Okay, there you go. Anything else?
I think you covered all of the films that were on my list. Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, which I haven't seen yet.
Oh, yes. That
it just
is out
was
right
released
now.
On Friday. And again, I didn't see it because we're
and
on
I'll
vacation.
Tell you what. Since we're talking about films that are currently in theaters too that I would want to see besides Spider-Man, The Art of Self-Defense looks fantastic. Jesse Eisenberg's new film. I think it looks really good. I'm intrigued to see it. I want to know what the twist is because in the trailer, they give you this hint. There's a big twist with that karate dojo. I want to know what it is. I'm going to try to go see it this week. So, you know, it's playing right now at the gateway.
I have to save that for the next podcast.
I
haven't seen it, and I'll probably only see it if they send us a screener.
Okay. Well, with that, we're getting up to our time limit, Paul. So, FilmBound.
FilmBoundPod.com. Yes.
Easy for me to say. When's your next episode coming out?
My co-host does all the editing, so
they're
normally released every Wednesday.
Every Wednesday.
Typically, we do one main feature, sometimes two, and then we'll either do a video release, a Netflix original, or our own recommendation, or a film topic.
Okay, cool. So, and you can get it at all the usual places, iTunes, Stitcher, all those places. Just look for Film Bound Pod, and there you go.
Yeah.
All right. Paul, thanks for coming on.
Thanks a lot for inviting me again.
You got it,
always
man.
Always a good time.
You got it. And we will do this again at the end of the year and see if indeed some of these movies that we mentioned they're coming up, if they hold their weight or if they sink to the bottom of the ocean.
Sounds good.
All right, with that, I'm going to throw it to a quick break. And on the other side of the break, I'll be back to wrap up the episode. There you go, ladies and gentlemen. Episode 200 is in the books. As I said before, I'm not really going to talk about the successes and failures of the PVD cast or any of the stories behind this episode, episode 200. I'm going to save that for Facebook and Twitter just because this episode's gone long enough. But let me tell you about Facebook and Twitter. First of all, you can find me on Twitter at PVDMVP. The Facebook page for the PVDcast is, of course, facebook.com/PVDcast. And maybe you want to just shoot me an email because you can't express yourself in only 280 characters on Twitter, for example. Well, you can do that simply by shooting an email to johnorlando@pvdcast.com. And don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe to this podcast so you don't miss an episode. And tell people about it, you know? It's pretty much everywhere. PVDcast.com is a great place to go. Or, as I said, you can find it pretty much everywhere. iTunes, Stitcher Radio, Spotify, SoundCloud, Google Play, all the big heavy hitters. All you got to do is search for PVDcast. Or sometimes you have to put my name in there, PVDcast, John Orlando, and you will find it. So with that, before I close up shop, want to remind you one more time that today's podcast is also brought to you by Audible. You can get a free audiobook download and a 30-day trial at audibletrial.com/PVDcast. They have over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. And for you, the listeners of the PVDcast, Audible is offering a free audiobook download with a free 30-day trial to give you the chance to check out their service. So to download your free audiobook today, go to audibletrial.com/PVDcast. Once again, that's audibletrial.com/PVDcast to get your hands on a free audiobook. And with that, I'm going to go ahead and get on out of here, ladies and gentlemen. I thank you for listening. I will chat at each and every one of you later. And as always, stay righteous, stay independent.